Welcome to the Scribble a Dream podcast, where expats, immigrants, foreigners, or whatever you want to call them, share their stories about living in smaller Dutch cities and towns. Hi, I'm Sora, your host. Today I have Kylie Van Dam on my podcast. Thank you for coming all the way out here, Kylie.
You're more than welcome.
So, Kylie, you're originally from Australia, and now you live in Houten, which is next to Utrecht.
Well done. You've done your homework.
Definitely.
Okay, so yes, my name is Kylie Van Dam, and I'm originally from Australia, born there, age 3, went to live in England. My parents decided to do that. And then age 9, we went back to Australia, and then 23, I went back to England, 28, back to Australia, 30, back to England. And that was the end of that story. Then we were in London for 10 years, London and Norwich, and now the Netherlands for 13 years.
And you moved here for your husband?
Now, Sora, this is the discussion. I noticed in one of your other podcasts that you said to your friend who was with you, we don't want to talk about the cycling because everybody loves the cycling. I'm sorry, Sora, I'm here to talk about the cycling. And the reason we came to live here is for the cycling. And I don't mean it's nice to ride a bike. I mean to be in a society that thinks about problems, about how to get people from A to B, but thinks about value of life during the day, about quality of life, about social qualities and values, and then builds the physical infrastructure to make those values happen on a daily basis for everyone. So I'm here big time to talk about the cycling.
That's amazing that you moved here for the cycling.
Absolutely.
I mean, I have never met anyone who moved here for that reason.
Really?
No.
Wow.
But I guess also like England is not that far from the Netherlands. So it's not like you moved here from Australia.
No. And when we shifted back to London in 2000 from Sydney, I suspect we actually wanted to be in Europe. We wanted to be in probably the Netherlands or Germany. But I had started a degree in literature. We were doing IVF to have a baby, all these kinds of things. And we needed to be somewhere where we could do those things in English and just kind of pick one life adventure at a time, you know, and to add shifting country to all of that, to Europe with a different language, was just not the right time. So after being in the UK for 10 years, I think that's when we realized with 3 children, then my degree was done. My husband's second master's was done. We were like, okay, every time we go to the Netherlands and we come home to the UK, we actually had awful homesickness. We actually felt ill leaving the Netherlands. And we thought, oh, come on, you got to sort this out. And that's when we decided to go.
That's crazy. Wow. Holy guacamole.
Yeah. I know it sounds big, doesn't it, when I say it like that, but it felt right for us. And 13 years later, 3 kids, you know, now 20, 19 and just 14, we absolutely made the right decision. We know that.
So how did you settle on Houten? I mean, that's such a random place.
I know, isn't it? Okay. So my husband is much more proactive with podcasts and, you know, listening, reading blogs, etc. I'm a bit kind of stand out the door and see what's happening. So he knew about some of the media content that was being created around cycling, life cycling societies. I didn't really. All I felt was when we were here, it felt right. It felt humane and it felt human. I could be a person here. So we made the decision thinking, okay, well, this might take a couple of years. My husband called me after, I don't know, 8 weeks or something and said, I think I've just done a job interview. And he thought he was just talking to somebody. He wasn't. He was actually doing a job interview for Rabobank in Utrecht, which is a massive national bank and actually has international branches as well. And so within 2 months of having made the decision in August 2010, 28th of October, we locked the door on our house in Norwich and got on a plane. And 35 minutes later, we lived in the Netherlands.
That's crazy.
And the way we came to, I know it is crazy. And when the way we came to Houten is that in Norwich, my husband was, his name is Aaron. Aaron was commuting to and from London. So he would be commuting 5 hours a day. So 2.5 hours each way. And that's not human. That is not humane. So when we came to the Netherlands, he knew where he worked, the center of Utrecht in the bank. And he drew a circle with a pencil of maximum 30-minute bike ride from the office. And we looked at all the places within that circle. And Houghton was within 30 minutes of that. Now, he knew of Houghton. I hadn't, you know, I don't do the blogs and stuff. I just don't. It's too much for me. But he knew of it. And we just went there, along with going to other places. And we got out of the car and we walked around and thought, this is spectacular. And not spectacular as in glamorous, shiny, expensive, big, you know, what perhaps people might often view as something they want to be, somewhere they want to be. It was spectacular to us because we could see that the car was hardly present in the main life of people. We could see there were kids on pedalless bikes. There were older people on bikes. There were older people in wheelchairs. There were people of all ages and all capabilities just going from A to B. The sound of that is delicious. The feel of it, your relationship, your body in relation to other people around you, or the space, is the space busy? Is the space manic? Is the space dangerous? Is the space smelly? Is the space loud? Your senses are differently engaged in that kind of space. And then to see the way people were with each other, so not only how it felt for us to be in that space, our children to be in that space, but the way other people were with each other. And it was just fantastic. Combine that with the fact that all of that built environment, which facilitates all of these human interactions, was green. And I don't mean the thing about green today means, you
like
know,
environmentally friendly.
Thank you. I meant literally green. And when I talk to you in a minute about Houghton and the way it was designed, which is something I've since learned about, it was intended that way. The green was the first thing that was designed, not the roads, not the houses, the green. And then around the green, the designers built the homes and the paths for getting people from A to B, in this case, the cycle paths, because they were like, well, bikes get people around quickly and they're not a car. And on the last level of design was the car. And that was instantly obvious to us when we went, not in an intellectual way, in an experienced way. When we went into this space, we were like, oh yes, we need to live here. And it feels, you know, in my experience now, and this is a weird number, but I'm now 53. And in my 53 years, I have lived in 36 houses.
Damn.
Yeah. So I think I know how it feels to live in a space. And it was just gorgeous. And what we would probably, in fact, I know what we associate with in other built environments, other cities, it's the space for rich people because it's green, because it's open, because it's quiet. Those are things that rich people can afford. And where we live, it's not like that. It's for everybody.
And in Norwich, what's it like? I've been to London, but yeah. I've never been to Norwich.
Norwich we really liked. Keeping in mind we've been away 13 years now, so it may have changed a bit. But again, Norwich, you know, once you've lived in London, that's kind of, well, it's a big city. And then you live in Norwich, which is, again, just a bit more human, you know, a bit easier to be a normal human being in, you know, it's not as much fight. Cycling there was, compared to London, good. When we look back now, we think we were insane to have our kids cycling on the roads in the way we did. And apparently, whatever kind of achievements they'd built up with cycling in Norwich, which is actually quite a university town, you know, so they've got the uni where I went and did my degree and my husband did his second master's. And they have a path going from the uni on the western side, I think, into Norwich. And that should all be cycle. I mean, it just should. And apparently that's got worse and less cycle friendly. And yeah, that was a bit heartbreaking. But Norwich itself we loved. We didn't leave Norwich because we didn't like Norwich.
Yeah. Is there anything that, you know, you came here because you love cycling and you felt at home, But is there anything that you really don't like? Because even if you like a country, like a place, like the infrastructure, there still will be things that you can't stand.
Yeah, I don't know if I can't stand. There's nothing here I can't stand. I mean, you know, again, 36 houses, you learn pretty quickly. There's nothing that's perfect, you know. As an Australian, I would say, and the Dutchies don't like me saying this, but I would say that their cuisine is not the greatest.
A lot of people can say that about British food.
A lot of people can. And British food has got better. You know, since I was first there in 1974, I remember going back to Australia in 79 and the food, you know, meat. We had meat. Yeah, 78 in England, we didn't have much meat. And then Australia is a foodie mecca because of the immigration. And then to come here, you know.
It can be better. I totally agree. I actually recently went to a new restaurant. Not new. It's not a new restaurant, but for us, it was new. We have so many Greek places in town. And first of all, I was really tired. So that maybe has to do with like how I was feeling. But I left there and I was just like, it's just average. It's like all the other Greek places. Like none of them stand, like they're good, but they're not like, okay, this one is way better than the other one.
I think, I don't know about you, but coming from Australia, we're spoiled. You know, the food in Australia is so good. It's so fresh, it's clean, it's vibrant, it's interesting, and it's not that here. It is what they call gezellig. It's very cozy. It's meant to bring people together and it's very simple, which I do quite like. And actually, we've learned to eat much more simply here. And when we socialize, I had to learn how to not present so much food on the table. I had to cut my menu in half and make it look very simple. And actually, I don't mind that either.
Yeah, it makes life a lot easier.
Yeah. You don't eat as much, which is good.
I was actually telling Kevin, we're hosting like a potluck next weekend with some friends. And I was thinking, like, what in the world am I going to make? And I was thinking of making stuffed peppers, which is, like, a bit more work intensive to make. And then I was like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, I can just make a stew, which is, like, throw everything in one pot, put it in the oven and forget about it.
Yeah.
And it's very good. Like, every time I make it, everyone loves it. So why would I, like, put myself through the work of, like, having to do extra work?
And if you make something too glamorous, people are intimidated by it, quite frankly. And then it makes people uncomfortable. And that is not what you want.
Oh, I think I make more, like, family-style food.
Okay, okay.
I'm not so – I actually, like, don't really know how to cook, like, gourmet and all that.
Okay, okay, good.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing. But sometimes I get slightly annoyed by how flat it is because, you know, I like a hill. I like a bit of difference. But by the same token, it's utterly stunning.
Yeah.
So I love living here.
Cycling through the fields is definitely, like sometimes I'm cycling or we're just driving on the highway and I look outside and I'm like, it's so beautiful. And people are like, dude, it's just a flat field. And I'm like,
it's just a flat field.
Because it's so green, it makes it so much better.
And the light and when you get layers of mist and then, you know, certain times of year, I love this time of year for the way the light comes through the clouds and, you know, you get mists on the fields. It's absolutely stunning. The browns, the greens, the oranges, gorgeous.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
But do you miss the coffee? Because I know Australians are like nuts about their coffee.
I don't drink coffee. And my husband does, and he bought a fancy pants machine in Utrecht and goes and buys his fancy pants coffee beans, and he's very happy. And my daughter works in an Asian supermarket in Utrecht. And she can buy me their PG Tips tea, which is the English tea that I love. So that's how I do that.
Oh, nice. Mm. Okay, so you don't really miss that.
No.
And your husband, he's British, Australian?
My husband is Australian.
And you met him in England?
Noi. I met him growing up and going to high school in Adelaide.
Aww.
So after all my houses and countries, I married the guy two blocks down the road that I went to high school with.
That's so sweet. That's really sweet. Like it was meant to be.
It was weirdly meant to be. Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. I actually had some questions people asked on my social media for you.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was, how is it to drive on the other side of the road and to cycle?
Okay. We didn't have a car for 4 years when we first came. So I didn't need to deal with that straight away. We had, the day after we arrived, we went to a bike shop and I became a bucky mama. And a bucky mama is the mum who rides a buck feet.
Okay, yeah.
That big bike with the big bucket on the front. And that was my life's goal, is to be a bucky mama. And we bought a bucky the day after we arrived, and that's what we did for 4 years. I am not a person who loves to drive. I like to go from A to B, but this thing, some people like to get in a car and they love to drive, is not me. And quite frankly, it's a dangerous task, you know.
I totally agree, 100%, 1,000%.
Cars are deadly, and we just ignore this. It's a simple thing. We just ignore it because we all live with them. But in truth, every time you get in a car, you're taking your life and other people's lives in your hands. You know, it's a reality. So after 4 years, I realized I was becoming a non-driver. And I thought, no, that's no good. So we did buy a car. And it took me a little while to get used to it. But I think driving a European car on European roads makes sense. It's when you're driving a European car on, for example, any a UK road. So you're on the left and the right and the right and the left. I mean, that's when your head goes spinning. You know, yeah. We just went to Australia in the summer and I didn't drive then because as I said, I haven't said this on the podcast yet, but because I have long COVID, that makes me very, very tired. And it means that you're not as reliable in your reactions and in your mental computation, shall we say. And that's really dangerous if you're in charge of a fast moving, exceedingly heavy vehicle. So I didn't drive in Australia. But here I'm okay because I'm used to it now.
But also cycling on the other side of the road right away. I mean, that's still a little bit.
It took a little while. And, you know, we had kids and they were zipping left, right and left, right. And you just end up with this, you just end up with this voiceover in your head that says, stick to the right. So sometimes if I'm in a different country, I hear me yelling at my kids when they were little going, stick to the right. I'm like, yes, stick to the left now, Kyles.
I totally get that. We went to Scotland last year and I refused to drive because there's no way. And my partner was driving and he, you know, it's very hard to remember to drive on the other side of the road. And of course the car is made, we rented a car, so it was made for Scottish roads. Mm-hmm. Well, for the other side of the road. Mm-hmm. And but it's still like I kept saying, drive on the left. Don't forget, drive on the left. Yeah.
And the worst time for that is late at night. Like if you've been somewhere and, you know, a pub or whatever, and you get in your car to drive back to your accommodation and there aren't other people on the road and you're a bit tired and it's night, your instinct drives you home instead of your intellect. And that's when it's easy to make mistakes. First thing in the morning, last thing at night. That's, yeah.
I think that's also even if you are in your
element.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I feel like cycling for me when I'm used to cycling. I grew up cycling.
Yeah.
Not as a mode of transportation sometimes, but not like the same as here.
Sure.
But sometimes, let's say if I had a call with a family member and we were talking about something that upset me or whatever, my mind just shuts off. And when I'm driving, cycling, I am almost crashing into people. Not on purpose, but it's like your head is so preoccupied.
Yeah.
And you have to be so alert because people are coming from all different sides.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes like I forgot to look left. So then the moped almost bumped into me.
Right.
And you have to keep reminding yourself, like, you have to look. You can't be distracted. You have to look, you know.
Mm-hmm. And now imagine that brain behind the wheel of a car. You know?
I don't drive here. So.
No, okay. Yeah, look, and it's just something that we have told ourselves is as normal as walking. And I have to say, and I know lots of people don't like this, but it's not true. It's not as normal as walking. We have normalized the dominance of the car. And we have problems because of that, you know, in our built environments, in the way we communicate with each other out on the street, in the way our children develop their self-confidence, all because we have allowed the dominance of this speeding machine to take over our lives and we don't even notice it.
But I think here it's a lot better. I notice that cars do look like, First of all, when you're driving in the U.S., there are almost no cyclists. And if people are cycling and they're young, they cycle on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, almost nobody walks anywhere. So you're not looking for pedestrians.
Well, there's no path for them.
Depends on where you are. Yeah. Some places, yes. Some places, no. So driving is a much calmer experience. We also don't have speeding cameras almost nowhere. Yeah. And yeah, there might be a cop on the side of the road, but it's that one cop against 500 cars.
Wow.
He can't catch all of them. So things like that. And, you know, the roads are very straight, mm-hmm. There's so much room. So driving is, I would say, like, when I get behind the wheel at the beginning, it's like, oh, my God, what am I doing?
Mm.
But after a few days, you don't even think about it. Like,
no, I know. What does it lull you into? A false sense of security. We had the same in Australia in the summer. I mean, very quickly we got used to it again. Not a problem. Driving everywhere.
Do you go back to Australia very often?
This was the first time in 6 years because we had the pandemic, obviously. So that kind of scuppered plans. And it's really, really expensive. You know, we're five, my husband and myself and three kids. I mean, that is, you get a new kitchen or you go to Australia for the 5 weeks. You know, it's a big job.
And it's a long flight.
And it's a long flight. And though I've been doing it since age three, I have to say, and I know I'm ill with long COVID right now, but this last trip, I thought, oh, yeah, okay, this is starting to wear me down now. You know, it's a big one.
And does most of your family live in Australia or in England?
Yep. My dad and his husband live in Sydney. And then my two sisters live in Adelaide in South Australia. And then my husband's family all now, after 26 years in London, they all live back in Adelaide.
Damn.
Yeah.
And there are also a lot of Australians here in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
At least I see a lot on social media.
Yeah. That's, do you?
Reality.
I've got one Australian friend in Houghton, and turns out she's from the same town as me, but we didn't know each other. But that's gorgeous.
Damn. Well, Adelaide is not really that small, right?
No. I don't know how many, what the population of Adelaide is, but no, it's not that small.
I only heard of Adelaide because I was watching this like reality TV show.
Uh-huh.
It was called like Yummy Mummies or something.
Oh.
And one of them was in Adelaide. So that's the only reason
funny.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Very, you know, dramatic as they go, those shows.
Funny.
Yeah. But do you know how many people live in Houghton?
Okay. So Houghton is currently 55,000 people. In 1973, Houghton got tagged by the Dutch government as one of the places that it was going to develop because we had a housing shortage here and different places in the country, we needed to put housing there, as is happening currently, actually. So in 1973, Houghton was an old town of 3,000 people, and the plan was over a 50-year period that we would be 55,000 people, and that's what we are now. So within the Ring Road, the beautiful Ring Road, I have a girlfriend, Kathy, from America, and she's a planner and urban designer, and she laughs at me saying, Carly, you've got a thing for the Ring Road. And I'm like, I don't have a thing for the Ring Road. And then I'm on the Ring Road going, oh, I love the Ring Road. So within the Ring Road, we're 50,000, and then we have a couple of villages underneath that are all part of our council. So we're up to 55.
Do you, sit on the council or something? You seem very passionate about
it. Yeah, I am really passionate about it. Okay. So we made this life choice to go and shift to this country. And that's a personal life choice, nothing to do with anything else. And then I think in about 2018, so we did that shift in October 2010. And then about 2018, I was in the UK visiting friends in Bath and really got annoyed again by the insanity of, you know, for example, Bath is the most beautiful Roman town and then Georgian spa town. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And right through the middle of it, you've got speeding cars. I mean, it just makes me both angry and want to vomit all at the same time. I was reading the Guardian newspaper and they have there a section called Lifestyle. And there was an article in there about, oh, these days, you know, we're missing the times when our children can have scabs on their knees and where they can go outside and be safe. You know, what is modernity coming to? Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I thought, I'm absolutely fed up with this. So I messaged them because they have, you know, contact facilities and stuff, and said, look, you're talking about those life qualities as though they are only nostalgic, as though it's not possible to have these kind of experiences in a modern, particularly Western, but a modern world. That's not true. Have you heard of Houghton? Because that's being lived right now. And we had just run, Houghton had just run the Cycling City of the Year for a second time, 2018. And so there was a little film by a maker called Bicycle Dutch. And he does fantastic stuff where he compares Dutch infrastructure with English or other infrastructure.
Not just bikes?
Not just bikes, which we all love. But no, this is Bicycle Dutch. So he's been doing this now 15 or more years. I mean, he's one of the first to do this. And he did fantastic content. So he created this film about Houghton. I sent it to them and said, look, you know, seriously, have a look. Ended up writing an article for The Guardian about Houghton and how it is to live here. Since then, if there are any projects that promote a non-car dominant modern way of living that come my way, where I can use Houghton as a pre-existing and successful example of living this way, I will jump on it, just like I jumped on you.
Guys, if you need a reason to go to Houghton, just talk to Kylie.
Come to
She's
me,
really
baby.
She's selling me on this.
Yeah.
Actually, it sounds really nice. I mean,
Yeah, go on.
But I've been to Utrecht once, but never to... I've been to the Utrecht area a few times, but only to the city once.
Right.
And now I'm like, if I ever go back, I gotta check
You come
out.
To me. You come to me. Yeah. Let's go for a ride.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. And we do. We get between 400 and 500 at the moment, international students of planning from universities. We get organizations from all over the world when they're looking at future developments that they want to do. If they've heard about Houghton, they will come to us and we will talk to them about the values of Houghton, which are fundamentally, they're not about technical solutions to traffic. They're about the core values at the center of who is public space for. So sometimes we get people coming, maybe young people, and they might come from America or whatever, and they'll look and they'll go, oh, the houses here are quite boring. And the answer is, yeah, they are a bit boring on the outside. They're fantastic on the inside.
So beautiful on the outside, I think.
Oh, well, in Houghton, they're a bit boring because they're 1980s, okay. 90s, 2000, you know. On the inside, brilliant, great big windows, lots of light, well planned. But I have to remind our visitors that you're not looking at the individual houses that you could potentially buy. It's not about what you can privately own here. That happens too. But what you're here to look at in Houghton is the communal space, the space that you are in when you leave your private bit. And what does that do for you, for your kids, for your relationship with your community? That's what people come to look at Houghton for. So there's a book that we're working on right now, and it came out originally in 2013, and it's called Het Groen Omarmd. I can show you it, and you can take a photo if you want.
Yes, I will.
And that means The Green Embraced. And this is effectively a book written by the primary designer of Houghton. He's not obviously the only person responsible for it, because he worked in a team, he worked with a council. He was one member of many people who had a vision for this place. And when he retired in 2013 from his own business and from the Technical University of Delft, he wrote down his history of being involved in this project from 1973. So he's still involved in this project.
But it's only in Dutch, or is it translated?
Well, this is the project for me, is it is currently only available in Dutch. I am involved in a project with Robert Derks, the designer and writer, and our local council member, André Botermans, and he is our cycling ambassador for Houghton. You come to Houghton through an institution, he will give you a presentation, cycle you around, etc. We three together are working on getting this translated into English. So it will be the same book, slightly updated, some stuff taken away, lots of beautiful pictures. And I mean, you know, I'm not a student of infrastructure planning, so I'm not used to seeing sketches and things. I love these. I'm not bored of them yet. You know, they're beautiful.
Like art pieces.
They are art pieces. I mean, they're delicious. So we will be blowing some of those up, you know. So this book will be, we think, the working title is currently The Green Embraced, as in to embrace the green, but the green then embraces you as well. And we hope to have this out kind of June, July, August this year.
Oh, wow. So it's like really soon.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
And do you write and edit for a living, translate, or what's your...
Yeah, I don't write this kind of work. If I were not ill with long COVID, I may have given it a go trying to translate it. As it is, I'm not well enough to even think about it. Neither am I professionally trained. That wouldn't stop me trying. But what I do, you asked earlier before we started recording, is I teach English to little Dutch children from age 4. But to do that, I write songs that capture particular content. So, example, a song about the winter or the summer or eating your lunch or having a wobbly tooth or not being allowed to see grandma and grandpa during COVID. I write those songs so that we can capture the vocabulary of that subject and then learn English through that.
How neat. That's such a unique way of learning, you know.
Yeah, it fell into place. It was an idea of my director, the school director of my kids' school. And I was quite reluctant for a few years. And then I did it voluntarily for 3 years and realized, ooh, I not only can do this, but I love doing this.
And do you do it as like a freelancer?
So I have my own business now.
I was going to ask, what's it called?
So my business is Van Damme Good Music, but you don't need to worry about that. My website is kylievandamme.com. And there you will see the content that I create for my kids. So you can learn to sing a song about what you want to be when you get older. I want to be a taxi driver, a deep sea diver. I want to fly through the sky. I don't know how, but I'd like to try.
That's really nice, honestly.
Yeah, so that's the writing I do. And then I will get involved in any cycling projects that I can.
It's so nice to know that you're like working in an area that you're so passionate about.
It is an utter privilege to have found this, you know, so late in life. I'll be really happy when long COVID leaves me and I can get back to it, having just found it. So that's a bit of a frustration. But yeah, it's a gift.
Can I ask, like, do the doctors know what's your, like, prognosis?
No, because, you know, as any your listeners will know, if you've been listening to any media or speaking to people, we currently don't have the science to understand what's going on. The data to now says most people recover. It can take a long time, being 18 months to sort of 3 years. So I'm just waiting.
I'm sorry, that's a really long time. It's really shitty.
It's a really long time and it's very, very frustrating and extremely life-challenging. But again, even within this subject, we can put this back into Houghton and say, with the design that Houghton has, even though I'm sometimes so sick I can hardly walk, you know, 200 meters or whatever, I can go outside my door and I've got green space. I have quiet space. I can poddle along to the shops and do my thing and then poddle along home. And that's been spectacular for me living through this illness.
I think that's one of my favorite things about the Netherlands is that when people ask, like, what is one of your favorite things? It's so much easier to be physically active.
Yes.
And it prevents so many problems in the future if you're physically active. And I feel like in America, you have to try so much harder to be physically active than here. Like, you cycle, it's just built into your life, so you don't even really think about it. And I lived in New York where everyone walks, you take the train, but that is such a rarity. Like, most of the U.S. is not like that.
No, and it comes down to that thing about, you know, when you build societies based around the car, you basically put everything in a box. And by that I mean, if you want to be physically active, you get in your car, a box on wheels, and then you go to a box where you pay for a gym membership and somebody gets your money out of you. And then you get back in your car and you pay your petrol so someone else makes more money out of you. And then you get back into your own private box. You know, here, you literally walk out your door.
Yeah, literally. And I have like fields really close to my house too, so I can walk like 15 minutes, cycle 5 minutes, and I'm literally right next to all the fields. It's quiet. There are farms.
Yeah. And on those days, you know, when you know, being a human being, I find is a bit of a challenge. I find the brain of a human being a very complex thing, and mine likes to jump about quite a bit. So, you know, some days I'm fed up with it and I need to be outside. And when I go outside, I just start to feel better. You know, you walk, you breathe some fresh air, you get some light into you. Nobody made any money out of me that day. I didn't need a therapist that day. I just needed to go for a walk.
I saw this video today. It said, like, if you hate everyone, eat. If you think everyone hates everyone, go to sleep or something like that. Yeah. And then one of the parts was like, if everyone is annoying, or I don't remember exactly the text, but it was like, go outside.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's me just automatically. My husband isn't like that. So sometimes I'm like, have you left the house today? You know, and I'll do it later. Well, I would like you to do it when there's light in the sky, if you don't mind, my love. And he's like, you know.
I fall into that trap sometimes too, because I work from home. So it's so easy to, I do go to the gym and I go to Pilates.
Mm-hmm.
So, but sometimes I go to the gym at night.
Sure.
And I don't go to the gym every day. So I usually, my sessions are like 3 to 4 times a week, sometimes 5. So it's not every day, but it's still better than nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I wanted to tell you, if I may, about 2 books that, you know, perhaps some people might be interested in.
Absolutely.
And they are books that I've found as I've gone through, you know, writing the article for The Guardian and getting involved in projects, etc., and talking to anyone who'll stand and listen to me about this subject. There are 2 fantastic books. The first one in Dutch came out just before the pandemic, actually. And it's called, in Dutch, it's called Het Recht van de Snelste. And it means the right of the fastest. In English, they have translated it and they called it Movement.
Very interesting translation.
Yes, I know. I wasn't that happy with the translation, but that's none of my business. And why I would recommend this book is, I think, even though it's written by 2 Dutchies, one of whom is massive in world education about cycling and cycling infrastructure more than cycling, and another who is a journalist, they do a brilliant job of presenting as being people who come from car-focused societies. You know, I recognized the Australian dependence on cars coming from these people's voices. I recognize the English dependence on cars coming from them, the American dependence on cars coming from them. I know where these people live. Saying that, we have a lot of cars in the Netherlands, so we still do have a problem with that. But I know they're Dutchies and they cycle a lot. Okay.
And we have a problem with very expensive public transport.
Well, there is that. But they do a brilliant job here. I mean, really impressive, about taking the hand of their reader and saying, just walk with me, please, through the discussion, through the history of how we got to be where we are as car-dependent societies. How did we give the power to the fastest? How did we do that? Because it wasn't always like that. How did that happen? Where did we go wrong? What decisions did we make? And it's an entirely relatable read. And I really loved it. I contacted both of them straight away and said, I think you've created something fantastic. So I really highly recommend it. It's called Movement, and it is by Talia Fricade and Marco de Brummelstroot. So good luck with that.
I'll take a picture of
them. Yeah, you take a picture. I really think it's fantastic. And then the other one, which is not quite as kind of mainstream read, but again, I think nails what's going on here. These are 2 Canadian people, Melissa and Chris Bruntlett, and they are experts in mobility, urban mobility. And they would come to the Netherlands and they would travel around the world and they talk about Dutch mobility solutions, etc. I mean, they're professionals. I mean, they're trained, you know, up to kingdom come. And they made the decision to come to live in the Netherlands. And this book that they've written is called Curbing Traffic. And Curbing Traffic is a beautiful collection of moments when people who knew everything about their subject actually knew it. The moment when it really, the penny was no longer theoretical, and that's actually not right. They've always understood it was more than theoretical, but it was deeply personal. That moment when that knowledge, that skill set, that professionality becomes guts and blood and bones, you know? I thought they did such a fine job of capturing that moment that I actually had to put it down a couple of times because it felt so personal and it felt like they'd been in my knickers while I'd been experiencing that myself. You know, it felt that intimate and that perceptive.
I think if I'm going to read one of these two books, it's definitely going to be Curbing Traffic.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I usually read like novels and things like okay. So it's like very different. But once in a while, I'll read like something else. Okay. So.
Yeah. Well, look, I highly recommend both of them. So this is Curbing Traffic, The Human Case for Fewer Cars in Our Lives. And it is by Melissa Bruntlett and Chris Bruntlett. So that's the cycling, Sora. I'm sorry, I had to do it. That's why I'm here.
Totally fine. I'm glad you talked about it, you know, because it is definitely like the Netherlands is definitely an example for the world. Like it is.
Absolutely. And this is no longer a wish list. This is no longer, oh, wouldn't it be nice? This is climate change is happening. So the way we've been living, it can't continue. I mean, that's just a fact.
I think we're going to end on that note. Thank you so much for being here, Kylie. If you guys want to check out her website, Kylie Van Damme. And thank you for listening to this podcast episode. If you want to support this podcast, don't forget to follow me on social media at Scribble a Dream. And if you have any writing or editing needs, Dutch to English translation, that kind of thing, just send me an email, sora@sorawrites.com. I do not get paid to create this podcast, so I fund it through my business. So I would appreciate you guys supporting me, and until the next episode.